Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, technology, therapeutics, and real-world perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by HCP Live Endocrinology, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on hcplive.com.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. I'm Diana Isaacs, and joined with my co-host, Natalie Bellini, for another very special episode that's done at the ATTD conference in Berlin, Germany. And for this episode, we have a very special guest. We are joined by Grazia Aleppo. And Grazia, if you don't mind sharing with everyone a little bit about your background.
Thank you so much, Diana and Natalie. My name is Grazia Aleppo. I'm a professor of medicine at Northwestern University in Chicago. And I also direct the diabetes program there as well. I am a passionate person about diabetes, everything diabetes, especially technology. And I really love to be at this conference because I can go into each session and just enjoy what they talk about. I just take care of patients with diabetes type 1 and type 2, of course, but a lot of people technology. So we use technology in type 1 and type 2, and anybody we can put it on, we do that. So that's my, and also teach the fellow and the residents and my colleagues as well when I need to. Is just all about cutting edge diabetes care.
Awesome. Well, I know I had the great privilege of serving on ADA's professional practice committee with you. So that's the committee that updates the standards of care. And so I know you really, you know, took the lead with the technology section. So if you don't mind kind of sharing what some of the big updates were this year for the 2023 standards of care.
Well, that was quite a feat to, first of all, take the place of my predecessor, Dr. Ann Peters, whom I totally admire. And it's a huge responsibility to make sure what we say is correct and up to date and backed up by evidence. And so we get together to go over the latest publications, and then we make some updates based on the strength of the data available, such as for type 2 patients who are on basal insulin, now we recommend we should use CGM because the data are backed up by the MOBILE studies that were published the year before. Similarly, we have one study now with alarm and alerts for type 1 and intermittent scanning CGM. That's all new. In fact, was published just before we got the guidelines out. And so, and for example, talking about starting CGM early in type 1 patients because the data support that. The earlier, the better for the future, up to 7 years of data. And so all these are done really by delving into the literature and try to understand, is this worth to go into the guidelines? And if it is, we discuss with each other. And then based on the way we give different kind of grades for the recommendations.
Yeah, I know that was great, you know, changing, because there was a recommendation in there about using CGM for type 2 on basal, but it was kind of a little weaker the year before. So should be used is definitely a lot stronger, and hopefully.
And it's backed up by randomized controlled trials. So that's evidence A, because it's done with the right ways to do a clinical trial.
And that's really important. You know, we see it in clinical practice, but until there is a trial that says this really does matter, now we can say to the ADA guidelines, let's make those changes.
Exactly.
So people, I think, get frustrated with that because we say, well, we do this all the time. We do, you know, sensors in pregnancy. We do sensors with type, but there is no guideline behind it from the ADA until there is a randomized controlled trial.
That's correct. And in fact, we need to be aware that sometimes the guidelines lag behind a little bit because we need to make sure what it's written or the people use these guidelines is actually tangibly verified. So that's why we have this big sort of onerous on us to make sure that we do it right.
Yeah. So with that, I'm kind of curious your thoughts. It's been really interesting to see all these sessions here about use of CGM in type 2 diabetes, like non-insulin treated at all. And kind of just curious what you think about that.
So with my head of a provider, I said, of course, yesterday, because we always believe that that is the case. And with patients in our practice, we've used CGM and they were on insulin. Now they're no longer on insulin, but they still use the CGM because they got better because of it, right? As far as my head in the ADA, I have to say, yes, I believe strongly. Can we have something that puts into the evidence base? And so I'm waiting to see. The immediate trial was published recently.
Yeah.
And I shared with the colleagues at the clinical update conference a couple of weeks ago in Tampa, but that's only one. We need more of those that say, yes, this is why we want to use it more people with type 2 diabetes. And then we can put it to the guidelines and the regulators pay for the sensor for those patients. Although some insurance companies are paying already. So it depends right. on the patient's plan. So it's always good to, as a provider, to find out, is this covered for you?
Right. Natalie and I are really fortunate. So we're in Ohio and Medicaid covers CGM for all people with diabetes, like
same
regardless.
For Illinois.
So that's right. amazing,
yes,
right?
Yes, we were very perseverant, I should say, mm-hmm. to speak with the leadership, a bunch of doctors in Illinois. And we basically show so much evidence that at the end they say, okay, we're going to do this. And now our patients, even with lower social determinant of health, they really are using these tools and doing fantastically. Even people who don't speak English. I mean, such a kick to see this patient doing so well.
And there are people right. that I think previously we might have said, oh, like, are they going to really get, like, are they going to understand it? Maybe is the health literacy going to be okay? But now we're like, well, it's covered. We might as well just see.
And not only that, when I have these patients in my office and I ask them, what made you do better? I say, this machine that you give me through the interpreter. And it's really so wonderful. I even had a patient who speaks only Polish, and she said, it's changed my life. So
wow.
we should not, of course, we never should do that, but sometimes we are stuck. We should never be sort of limited by the patient knowledge, because the tool by itself is so powerful that can break any barrier that you can think about, even literacy. That really has been my experience as an endocrinologist in practice for more than 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's right. awesome. So I'm curious, I know you're going to be presenting at this conference. Could you tell us a little bit about your research and what you're presenting?
This is the labor of love. We've been working this for almost 3 years. In fact, I presented the pilot study here at ATTD in 2020, just before COVID stopped our lives. And now we have the true clinical trial. It is done all virtually. It's the VDIS trial. And the purpose is to do a virtual clinic where we offer CGM technology to type 1 and type 2 patients, participants in this case, without geographic limitation, because it's all virtually done. We work with Cecilia Health, and they had onboarding of CGM and training, but they also had education sessions as needed for the patient after the training for the CGM, but they also support for behavioral health with a team of behavioral specialists that were trained by clinical psychologists.
Wow.
So we got the 6 months data, the 1 year is still coming, but the 6 months I'm gonna present, and we had decreased A1C by 0.6 to 0.7% with a very statistically significant value, very low. And we had decrease in fact, the higher the A1C at baseline, the more the decrease in A1C, like 1.5, 2 points,
wow.
and type 1 and type 2, both groups. And we also have increasing time in range. Again, this is even greater for greater A1C at the beginning. But we also have decrease in diabetes distress, hypoglycemia fear. So all this PRO that people did not see that before, but sometimes it's hard to see this patient-related outcome, and they are so clearly outlined. And so we are very happy to see that this particular method of engaging with the patient in a virtual manner has been able to provide such fantastic results. It's the first time it's totally virtual, totally. Never saw the patient. In fact, I'm part of the writing and the sort of the steering committee, but the patient very rarely had to go to an endocrinologist. There was one available, but the work was done by the educators, which are phenomenal people, and by the patient asking for maybe repeated session, but not so much for the education mm-hmm. of the training, more for the diabetes self-management, so they could actually do that in a better way, more positive. And so I'm so looking forward to present.
Wow.
These data.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, and there's so many factors in that, right? Lots of patients don't have access to endocrinology. And now you can say you're in Chicago, but you could speak to someone in Southern Illinois. You could do this from anywhere. That is going to, it just changes the face of who we can do more for these underserved patients that can't get in. They can't afford the gas.
Exactly. Or they can even have maybe a few
right.
doctors in the area, right?
Right.
So
right.
this is how we were able to provide this care. And in fact, for the type 1 group, it was 75%, 25% sort of endo PCP, but for primary care, it was 50-50.
Right.
And so this was so important.
Wow.
And in fact, one of my patients was actually part of the study, and the patient is, let me be the same, and is so much better. And I should say, I was seeing the patient, but no, it was the education, the availability of this person that really made a humongous difference. The patient could not afford the sensor before, and that was one of the major barriers. And so now the patient has been able to work with their insurance, figure out how to do it. Now the patient is using an AID system. The same patient then 2 years ago would not want to hear about a sensor because she didn't believe in it. She couldn't afford it. And now she's like, I'm doing this forever. With an A1C that is now in the sixth. The point is, it makes a life of difference for the patient, really.
Yeah, I'm curious, how often did you guys follow up with the patients? Like, what was the frequency?
Well, it was as needed, really.
Okay.
So some people are in more than one meeting, some people are fewer, and there'll be more data coming out for the very one issue. Mm-hmm. It will be presented most likely at the DDS for the the summer for the CDC, for the Diabetes Educator Conference.
Okay.
ACDS?
Yeah,
ACDS. I can't do it. ACDS. Confusing. So, anyway, for the diabetes educators. And so that would be presented later on, but really it was as needed. And sometimes there was an escalation. For example, the patient needed some mental health behavior or behavioral health. Mm-hmm. They would be escalated to the psychologist. So there was the knowledge and the fact that they could do something about the behavioral health challenge, because in practice we don't have much access to that, and so there was such a huge benefit the patient was able actually to get this information readily available to them as needed.
I'm sorry if you said this already, but was this a pre-post, or were they randomized to like the virtual versus usual care?
No, it was totally virtual, and it was a prospective study with no randomization. It was baseline. And they could be naive to CGM or previous CGM user, but with elevated A1C. And so that was the criteria. And if they were interested, they were sent a electronic consent, because there was no way to do this in person. It was all virtual. And so when we did this, and the patient participated, and then there were the training sessions, and then the education, and then as needed contacts, the participant was initiating, not the educator. So that's what the patient said, I want to have one more session, and it was provided to them.
Okay.
As if it were in real life.
Right.
No, that's great. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So hopefully in the summer, you'll see some more information at the ADCES.
Yeah, Association of Diabetes Care and Education Specialists.
I messed it up. Yes, that one. It used to be AAD, so easy.
I know,
so
I had to make
DNS, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, anyway. It's okay. Well, we're glad you'll be presenting there.
But the thing that is important is the contribution of the educators.
Right.
We cannot emphasize enough how educators are so very precious to us and to patients. Because even though the sensors are easy to use, once you train them right, they have all the understanding how to troubleshoot the sensor, what can be wrong, whether it's accuracy or failure, and there is less frustration on the patient side, because they know that they got enough information to say, okay, I know what this is, I don't get frustrated or stop using it. So that's one thing that I find to be very important, especially in clinical practice. We need to get it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. We totally agree with you. I don't know if you can talk about this, but medication adjustments, like how were there medication adjustments done during this time period? Like, how frequently were they done? What were the things?
Excuse me. They were having some insulin adjustments based on a protocol, of course, we had, because this was through some collaboration. Mm-hmm. But they were all multiple daily injections or pump users. So that was the medication adjustment.
Okay. So they could adjust insulin. Because it's so interesting from the mobile study, how, you know, there weren't that many medication adjustments in that study.
Right. And that was a different purpose.
The mobile was
to show that you could do CGM studies, not in endocrinology settings, and the primary care was involved. And so it wasn't that there was so much aggressive adjustment. In fact, the A1C at the end was 8, it wasn't 7.
Right.
But that didn't matter, because the point was, CGM makes a difference.
Right.
When we took it away in the second portion of the study, then got worse.
Right.
And so the point is not the medication, it's really the engagement of the patient. And I was doing the study as well. Patients didn't want to give it away.
Right.
It was like, please don't take it away from me.
Yeah, it just seems like you need the technology. It's like the CGM is beneficial, but also like the engagement, like from having a team, like having the psychologists, the educators, like the whole team, And then also, like, the medication is the third piece too. Like, often people do better if there's some adjustments as needed. So
yes, and it was done in the mobile by the primary care.
Yeah.
But remember, they were not on, only few people with it got into multiple daily injection. It was mostly adjusting all the medication, but it was the fact that the primary care was able to get these data that were never given to them before.
Right.
And that empowered the primary care. I saw colleagues of mine who participated in our study. They say, you know, I have some other patient on the CGM. Can you help me out? Of course I'm helping you out. Because now we are, they have the bug.
Yes.
They get the information.
They can fix it.
So
now
they're interested in using the tool that before was maybe concerned because they were afraid about it or something like that.
Oh, that reminds me. Didn't you write a paper about, like, interpretation of CGM data? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So let me tell you the story of this paper. So we've been teaching, my colleague Anata Sumulovic, she is the program director of the Fender Fellowship Program. And so Emily and I said, we need to write this down because we've been doing this with our fellows for a couple of years. Make it easier and easier and easier. So how easy can we make it? One page. You know, can they, less than one page when it's so difficult. No, it's just like, so what we did was to make very simple approach. First is there enough data to look at? Do we need to have 70% of 14 days? If that is it, then you have three questions. What is the problem? Where is the problem and how to adjust? And we discover the information in the AGP. So what the problem is in the glucometrics, time and range, above, below range, coefficient of variation. The where is in the AGP. What are the fluctuations? Hypoglycemia, when is it fasting? Is it postprandial? And that to adjust is based on the daily glucose at the bottom of the page of the AGP. And so then we made one page of findings and recommendations. So that can guide the primary care to say, okay, what do I do? Just give one page. You can say, this is what I see, and I can modify it based on what the patient is, alpha-nuria, hopefully not much of that, insulin, SGLT2, DPP4, GLP. And that is so simple. And we're actually bringing this to a community of primary care because we have integration. See, we've integrated CGM into our medical records.
Oh my gosh, you've actually done that.
We have.
Oh, I.
And so we have, it's been a year, again, a little level of work, but we have now direct integration of Dexcom push into our medical records in Epic every 5 minutes.
Wow.
And then we can get the 14 days. We can get the a smart phrase that tells you what the table, what the numbers are, and then we can document and bill.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. Are you able to see the AGP that way?
Yes, we did.
Oh, you are.
So we had to develop that too in our institution with a specific color approved by institution, but actually for colorblind people, so I can see it, just in case somebody has the issue. And we have two different kinds of screen. One is the AGP with 14 days. In the other one is the spaghetti, the weekly, but it's actually dynamic. If you put the cursor, it tells you the 1 day, just isolate. So we are running our pilot and very excited about this new initiative we're doing in the institution.
Well, it's going to standardize your care there so that a primary care can then say, you know, when you see someone dropping overnight, which we see in endocrinology as a consult all the time, cut the basal back, do this, take off this. The idea that you can put that in to an EHR and make it simple, we can't take care of people. We all practice in an endocrinology setting. There's too few of us, even with advanced practice providers, even with all the support that we have. I don't know what your waiting list is, but ours is just exactly.
Either one,
I
know.
Right. So we have to do something else, right? And you're really helping solve a bigger picture.
So my desire is, the vision is this, to have the primary care say, the information is right there for me. I don't even have to go to, let's say, Clarity or LibreView. It's right there in front of me. And so what is my excuse?
Right.
Because we're trying to make this, again, easy for our colleagues so that we can expand the use of CGM within practitioners might have felt uncomfortable before.
And then if you need to still send to endo, then do it. But for some of them, it's very simple to make small changes and you really see.
How did you make this happen? Because I feel like they're like, well, I'm curious what barriers.
So many.
Yeah.
But again, it's been more than a year we've been working on this. And so we're not done yet because my desire also is to put it in the hospital, but that's a bit far away still.
Right.
Because if you can do that, what a wonderful thing that would be, but it's too soon. The desire is to be able to have remote patient monitoring. Mm-hmm. And as we do blood pressure, all the things, we want to do this too, because it's becoming really standard of care.
Right.
So why not?
Are you, I know you mentioned Dexcom, are you integrating other systems?
Not just yet. We're working with Dexcom because the API was available at no cost. And so it was really available directly. So I know that my institution, we have some wizards in the IT department that are working on this very topic. And so I don't know what the status is yet. My job is to make sure that everything works right, the data comes out is sort of accurate. So we're working on that. And we are inviting patients who then get a MyChart message and they link their own device to our medical records.
That's great. So like they do,
Yes, and the other day was so fun because this patient, in fact, was at the airport. How's that? And the patient wrote me a MyChart message that says, I have some issue with my glucose, but she already was on Epic. I had to go to Clarity. I just click on her chart, figure it out, adjust the basal, done.
That's so nice. You're not having to go to a separate system and like and put in your username and password.
It was all there.
Wow.
So the first time I just used it.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a big part of it too.
I do this anyway for a patient, but this was so easy for me to do because it was right there. I had the chart note next to it in the same screen. So I thought I can do this pretty fast. And it was, I felt so good about that because it's been a really long process and a lot of work. My volunteer work, by the way.
But of course,
You know what, though? It's worth it. So I'm looking forward to
it. Well, it will be. And I also think about, like, all the research and stuff you can do with that, like having that data readily available.
You could track you could track drugs and postprandial notes. You could track all kinds of things.
But also understand quality improvement, how we can track in our population. It's so important today to do quality improvement and to see, do we have equality and equity in medical care? What are our patient population? Do we have Caucasians, African-Americans, Asians, Hispanics? What do we have? And can we make it better? Makes sense. So there's so many things we can do in the future. Right now, my job is to make sure the data is right, that is coherent, it shows easily, and then that the primary care can access and have no challenges into gather it. In fact, we are developing training for our primary care colleagues. So it's not just we have integration. How do we present to our colleagues?
Right.
So we're doing sort of, it's really wonderful project. I'm so, I'm so thankful that I was able to be part of this.
We're so excited for you. We're excited that we maybe can share that at one point in our futures too. That would be Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking to us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you and have a great rest of the conference.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.